Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Scary Cast. This is Dr. John, live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Glad to be here tonight. We've got some wonderful guests on tonight. Wanted to remind everybody, upcoming events, those are very, very important. On June 8th, 9th, and 10th, the one and only, the Lizard Man Festival from Bishopville, South Carolina. Be sure to check it out at lizardmanfestival.com. It's going to be a blast, hosted by the South Carolina Cotton Museum. Wonderful folks there. We're going to have a blast. We're going to have a Comic-Con. We're going to have an outdoor street festival. We're going to have meet and greet for some very, very wonderful artists and writers, including Lyle Blackburn, who wrote Lizard Man, The True Story of the Bishopville Monster, Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, Greg Bo Watson, Marvel DC, and Fox Television artist, Matt Delf, Bigfoot explorer and president of Micro Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization, Dr. John Stamey. I'll be there talking about latest research on Lizard Man, and our other special guests who are with us tonight. I'd like to introduce Jack Pierce and Gabby Munn. Ladies first, Gabby, it's so good to have you on tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Well, good. We're glad to have you here. And, of course, Jack of the Magic Arts, Jack Pierce. How are you doing tonight?
I am fantastic. How are you doing, John?
Okay, now listen, I'm not fantastic. I'm a cranky dude. I'm out there trying to find a lizard man. I'm trying to find a mothman. I'm trying to find Bigfoot. It was really funny. Now, I've got to make a – can I make a crack on someone? Can I say something uncomplimentary? Because you're both good friends of mine. All right. I went in this morning to a fast food restaurant. And by the time I sat down and had my breakfast sandwich, eight people asked me – how I was doing, and were hoping I had had a wonderful day so far. Now, can you guess which fast food restaurant that might be? Can you guess?
Chick-fil-A.
Gabby, you're a psychic, aren't you? Chick-fil-A. And by the time the seventh person came up to me, I'm sitting there trying to eat my little sandwich and drink my little coffee. And that person said, well, I hope you're having a wonderful day. And I looked at that person and I said, you know what? I may choose not to have a wonderful day. I may have challenges in front of me.
Just because you badgered me enough.
Say it. I mean, good Lord. I mean, you know, I mean, the food's great. I'm going to tell you what, Chick-fil-A's got great food. But, Gabby, you must obviously, you've had that problem with Chick-fil-A too, right?
Well, I'm actually really put off by how ridiculously nice they all are, and I feel a little sorry for the people who do work at Chick-fil-A, probably because they are badgered to tell people how, you know, they keep saying my pleasure at everything, which is just an odd thing to say to people constantly over and over and over again. I think something has changed with Chick-fil-A in the past several years in terms of how they train their employees and how they tell them to interact with their customers.
I don't know if there's a restaurant on the East Coast called Bubba Gump's.
That, yes.
You guys have Bubba Gump's
we
too?
We do.
Yes, we do.
That kind of behavior makes sense for a restaurant like that, where that's the point. It's a sit down and you get the whole experience.
Yeah.
But at a fast food restaurant, you don't need a whole experience with it.
Jack, you hit the nail on the head. I don't want an experience. I want to sit there. It's like 7:45 in the morning.
Gotcha.
It's 7:45 in the morning. I just want to sit there and think. And I have my pad with me. I'm trying to think, make sure I've got my little eyes together. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, I'm so glad that by the way, everybody, these are wonderful friends of mine, and we talk a lot. We share some great times together there in the Camden, South Carolina area, which is truly one of the centers of my universe. And I'm so glad to have the two of you on here tonight. Thanks for being here.
We're glad to be here.
The reason, well, oh my goodness, I'm glad you're here. Oh, Gabby, we're so glad you're here. Jack, oh, we're glad you're here. I'm sorry. I was being terrible. I was being terrible there. It's been a bad guy.
I feel so awkward now. I wasn't expecting this whole experience.
This experience. I know. How is your sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich on your delicious whole grain
bun?
How is
your night going? I just wanted to make sure.
Oh, my goodness.
I've been
out promoting Lizard Man this evening, so it was good. Anyway, everybody's here on ScaryCast, and they want to find out about you two folks. You are experienced tarot readers. I will tell everyone how I met you, and it was wonderful. I was running the Camden, South Carolina Comic Con, which is kind of the sister event to the Lizard Man Festival in Bishopville. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I got a vendor registration from someone I didn't know, which was the two of you. And I thought very little about it, and you know, because I have a lot of new vendors coming on. And so I get there, and then this very nice, shiny, happy couple shows up. You folks are as nice as you can be. You're well-dressed in period attire from the 1800s. All of a sudden, you throw out this beautiful mat on your table. You put up some product, and then all of a sudden you're doing tarot readings. And I was thrilled because you had not said in your vendor application what you did, and I thought it was great. And by the end of the day, I was wanting to talk to you. You still had a line wrapped around the corner of the booth, and it was great that people are interested in tarot. So why don't you tell us why you do tarot? I know a little bit about it. But why do you do tarot, and what is its importance? Now, this is probably going to spawn a lot of conversation, so I will throw that. This is your $20 toss, your 20-point toss-up on College Bowl. Exactly, Gabby. And Dr. John, who likes to talk too much, is going to shut up.
Well, Jack, you want to start?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start on that, actually, because I think it sort of lends into there's a fascination in it because it's such a mainstream way of doing what we call reading. Now, reading people, you don't need the tarot cards per se to read a person to potentially, you know, we have all these keywords like see auras around them to be able to be psychic with them and to know things about them, to be able to connect with them, to chat with them, to give advice to somebody. I mean, I will say that, you know, not every therapist can read tarot, but I'm sure almost every tarot reader it could be a therapist. You know, there's all that thing. It's the idea of being a reader is something of being able to read a human being and be able to see what they need to hear, and then find the tools and the applicable ways, and then work with the universe in order to bring them that information. And the fascination with that, I think, is that it connects something that is so deep-rooted in each and every one of us, which is our love for stories. My personal fascination with the tarot began when I left a very, very conservative religion that was very much against any kind of thing like that, anything having to do with it. I left that religion, and I immediately ran into a gentleman who read me very, very accurately and knew a lot about me. And the big science question, because I feel like there's a big connection between doing magic and science. It's not, you don't have to separate them. The big science question was, why do you know that? How do you know that? What is it that you do, and how do you do that? And so when I got introduced to the concepts of you know, reading and all of that, it opened up and showed me that we do this regardless of whether or not we even know we're getting this. Every time you sit down to watch a movie and you cry because the storytelling hits you in the right way. Every time you sit down with a book and it just resonates so much and you see yourself as the character, every single time you sit down and play chess across the board with somebody else, you are reading each other and you are interacting in a way that is very similar to what happens when you are sitting across the table with somebody playing the tarot. And so it's such a great tool for conversation. And in a world where we're, you know, flipping out our phones, I think what people are realizing is they're going back to a traditional form, an older way to start communicating and learning old ways of communication and even updating them as well.
That's pretty good, Jack. I mean, you're talking about older ways of communication back before the internet, before radio,
mm-hmm.
before anything. I mean, the tarot dates to approximately 1600. Isn't that when kind of date the tarot?
Well, depending on which one you're talking about. So you have like the Rider-Waite, which is, turn of the century in 17, roughly. And then you have Rider-Waite is 19, is 1900. Marceau is what I'm thinking of is earlier.
The Marseille is, a much older.
Yeah.
Medieval times.
Yeah, very, very 14. 14 to 16 is about the time you're seeing these images pop up. And then of course these images, and just to give a quick definition of what the tarot is, just a case, because that's one thing I get emails a lot asking me, actually, because I think I should backtrack a bit.
Number one question we get when people approach the table: what is this?
So I'm gonna go ahead and head back to zero, because then I started with one and told a little bit of story about what the tarot is, but actually the tarot itself has a zero card. And the zero card is very important, and what I'm going to tell you is that, because I also think I need to say what is the tarot. I think that's more important than anything else. The tarot is a set of 21 cards that make up, I'm sorry, 22 cards, 21 and a zero card that make up the major arcana, or the trump cards as they're called, and then you have the minor arcana, which is your numbered cards and your court cards in four suits. Now, what I mean by that is, if you just to explain that real quick, it's the easiest way. If you imagine a deck of playing cards, your 56 cards right there, and you add one more court card into it, that is your minor arcana. So 1 through 10 are ace through 10, and then jack, queen, and king, which in the tarot cards is page, knight, queen, and king. And so those cards all have meanings behind them. Every single card has a predispositioned meaning. So something along the lines of, this is there's a change in your life happening right now, or this is a hard thing you're dealing with, or an easy thing to deal with, or you have an advantage right now, you have a disadvantage right now. All of these philosophies behind each card, with a piece of imagery that sort of ties into that, and tied into the numerology of the cards, tied into a lot of very biblical iconography, as well as just human iconography, things like money and swords and wands and things like that, that are just symbols that mean things in our literature and in our lore. And so you have all these cool images, you have all these beautiful symbols that then can tell, can be read. And so when you pull the cards, you look at a card, you look at the person, and you explain what there is going on with them. And that's how the tarot reading goes. If you want to add anything more to that, Gabby, it's kind of.
Oh, well, to that particular point. I guess we can go back to the very first question that you were asking, what is the tarot and how did we come to it? I personally came to the tarot, a lot of people have seen the tarot represented in film and computer games, any kind of media, as a very scary thing. And they usually show what Jack was talking about, the major arcana cards that are the scariest, in order to make something, much more eerie. And I feel like people want to equate using the tarot to also using a Ouija board. And it is not the same thing at all. Using a Ouija board can be very, very dangerous. Using the tarot is much safer. It's you're not opening portals like you are with a Ouija board. You are actually, I came to the tarot because I didn't have anyone to talk to at that time. I was dealing with issues that were so personal, and if I were to ask any close friends or family about those particular issues, they would have been too close to my situation in order to give me objective advice. Mm-hmm. So I first came to the tarot. I had always wanted to learn about how to read the cards because it was always this mystical, gypsy, fortune-telling thing that maybe had a little touch of evil to it. But that's not what it means to me at all. It really does.
Well, don't mess with the gypsies. They know a lot.
Oh,
no. They really do.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. No. They can put curses on you. They can use the cards against you. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can do that if you put that bad intention behind it. You put your own energy into the cards. And I'll get into that a little bit later. But when I use the cards, I feel strongly that, you know, I am speaking to a friend who will give me objective advice.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first really started getting into reading, I was just reading for myself. Never did I imagine that I would actually be able to read for other people and that they would find that valuable. I just started out, it was just me and these cards and what they had to say to me. And it was really fascinating in that they always advise you to keep a tarot journal, especially when you're first starting out.
Mm-hmm.
And in hindsight, in looking back, when I looked back at some of the readings I did prior to meeting Jack, it actually foretold of our meeting each other. There was a specific card that was a representation of him. And so, from there, I just started really taking the tarot on from almost an encyclopedia kind of way. I was very methodical in how I memorized the cards, each one of them. It's very daunting looking at it because there's a total of 78 cards. How am I supposed to memorize all of these? My advice to someone who's first coming to the tarot would be lay all of the cards out in order. Lay all of the majors out in order from 0 to 21 and lay each suit, each of the cups, the wands, the swords, and the pentacles, lay them all out in order in a very organized way. And notice that the journey of the cards in sequence is actually a journey. And each card represents a specific stage of your life or moment, some kind of incident, or even people and places, different things like that can happen in your life. So the cards aren't as daunting as having to memorize 78 random
mm-hmm.
meanings. There actually is a structure to this deck of cards. And
okay. So
I took a really methodical approach doing that. And when I met Jack and I watched him do a few readings, honestly, it was infuriating because I knew the book meaning of behind each one of these cards. I understood if you're looking at the Rider-Waite, which is they call it the universal deck because it's the one that's most
Smith.
Rider-Waite-Smith. I apologize.
The artist is very important.
That's very true. Sorry about that.
No problem.
That's the deck that most people are familiar with. And I knew from reading all of the imagery, every symbol in there was important. And it's a mix. It's not just Christian imagery. It's also Judeo,
mm-hmm.
Egyptian,
mm-hmm. Grecian.
Yeah, it's a mix of a lot of different, different religions and cultures that are mixed up in this particular deck that most people are familiar with. So when I watched him reading, he was very freeform about it. There was definitely a sort of clashing of, I guess, the approach I took to it, which was more of a, traditional schooling. I sat there, I book learned it, and he had a more approach because of his natural abilities to really read people and see their auras automatically. And it was a very fluid way of interpreting the cards. It's not wrong. There's really no wrong way to go about it. It was just so opposite to what I was thinking the interpretation was, and listening to his very free interpretation of it, I would step in after, you know, after he would pause from having read his cards, and I would say, may I add something? What this card actually means, and what I feel that it's saying is this. So you will never ever see two identical readings
mm-hmm.
from two different tarot readers.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is going to have a different interpretation of, you know, these cards that are laid out in front of you and the way that they interact with each other and what they each have to say about the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So no two tarot readers are alike. No two tarot readings of the same set of cards are going to be the same. So hopefully that is less daunting
mm-hmm.
because, you know, the future is fluid. Things are ephemeral.
What is,
you know, the interpretation of signs are.
Hmm?
Yeah, go ahead.
What is the future? What is the future? What is the future?
Ooh.
So one thing I think, I don't know if you saw, one thing I don't read is a past, present, future reading. If anybody's ever gotten a tarot reading from me, if any of you and come to any of the shows or anything, I will tell you immediately, I will not read your future. I will not tell you your future. What I will tell you is your inclination and what you are most likely to do. Anyone who tells you they're going to tell you what it is your future, you, even the best tarotist in the world is only 99% right and only 99% of the time. And if you don't think 1% is a big deal, you know, that's it is. It is in a lot of ways. So no one can be 100% accurate even when telling the future. What you can see is you can get a good insight on a person. Think of that, once again, going to that chess philosophy. So you can get this idea of looking at a person and saying, this is the way you are typically going to do. Now, for me personally, I look at time less linearly and more like a circle, that we are a continual rotation of things that happen over and over and over and over and over again. And the way we behave creates the same thing to happen over and over and over again. So when the inside of the cards comes out, what it's basically saying is, if you follow this pattern you are currently on, this is the direction you will go. And this is what you will probably end up doing. And so at that point, each person decides what their own fate is and what they want to do with that information. Because knowledge changes everything in our actions. So many of the old Grecian stories is about, well, since because they heard the future, they now did the thing that created their future. But in each one of those stories as well is this lesson of you shouldn't fight the gods. You work with the gods to create your, and I use the word gods very loosely, basically any powers that work with you, fate, death, powers that are working, or even gods, or if that's the words you use, then that's okay too. But whatever powers that you're using to move, to progress forward in your life, how you are using them is very much a condition of what is your natural inclination based on your personality, based on the way that you act toward the universe and you act toward other people, and therefore how they then act toward you in the universe gives you what opportunities the universe gives you. And so you'll see this continual ebb and flow of how we interact changes our destinies, and then how we interact with those destinies then changes our destinies. And 9 times out of 10, I mean, thus far in the, you know, knock on wood, thus far with every reading I've done, everyone has said I've been accurate to their personality, to them telling them what their inclination would be. And at that point, then they can say, well, then they can ask the cards, well, then what should I do regarding that based on the reading? And then that's where you can continue on with the readings and keep on delving deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into that person and understand more and more about them and what options they have. Because the deck is all about options. In fact, the deck separates the options into 4 suits. Your 4 elements, earth, air, fire, and water, or swords as air, earth as pentacles, water as cups, and fire as wands. And so you have these 4 suits. And then to take those even a step further, why we feel very connected to playing cards sometimes, certain playing cards. You have the spades are swords, the clubs are wands, you have the diamonds are pentacles, and you have the hearts are cups. Therefore, you have another saying of that, which is passions are wands or fire, emotions are cups or water, the pentacles is money or the physical things or diamonds, and you have the swords is air or the words and actions in our way we physically interact with the world. So when we see all those things and we put our brains in that mentality of how we physically, what physical objects can then be correlated to our way we behave and the way words we use, you'll see people change their future because we now have the words to change our future. We now have the tools to do so. And that's what the tarot is really about. It's about this little boy who doesn't have the tools to do something and becomes a magician, or a little girl. It's a very androgynous character in the tarot. A little boy or a little girl who then goes and becomes a magician because they have all the tools to do so. And that's what the words or the ideas or the thoughts or the feelings or the emotions or the drive or the money or the physical things they need to go and do what they need to do and move forward.
Awesome. Okay. Well, we have come to our first semicolon in tonight's show. Because what you didn't know is I've got two grand exercises I'd like for us to do. First of all,
oh boy.
Are you, and by the way, you didn't know this. Do you have a tarot deck near you?
Near me.
Which one of the dozen or so would you like us
grab a tarot deck. Please.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Got one?
Each one of them or just Jack?
I want one deck. Okay?
Mm. And
interesting choice.
Yeah.
And what I would like for Gabby to do is to shuffle the deck.
All right.
You've heard our shuffle story. While she's doing that, I'll tell you the shuffle story if you'd like to hear it.
Oh, no.
Well, go ahead and tell
all
it
right,
now, Jack. That's it. And Gabby, then let me know when you're done. And then, Jack, tell your story.
All right. So the shuffle story is actually something bad on me. It's a story of the it's telling a bad thing about myself, which is I forget to shuffle while I'm talking to people. And there have been times, because I'm so lost in conversation with people, I will sometimes forget to shuffle the deck. And there have been a few times where I have pulled the exact same card I pulled for somebody just before them.
Specifically, what was so funny is that he would shuffle as you would normally see someone doing, but he would not cut the card.
Right.
So there's no movement of pretty much any of the cards, especially the top ones, and he pulls from the top.
Right.
I personally, and you know, this is another example of no two tarot readers are alike. I shuffle in a very specific way and cut the cards in a very specific way. Oh, man. Oh, fine. I had a jumper. We'll talk about that in a second.
Okay. So Gabby, let us know when you're done with shuffling,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah. I need to do it a couple more times. I'll explain what I'm doing but the thing is that I really like for my querent, the person across from me who's asking the question or who I'm doing a tarot reading for them to cut the deck that puts their energy on the cards and the cards can read them. And then I fan all of the cards out once they've cut the deck and they choose the cards that, you know, the number of cards that I ask them to pull. I do not like to pull people's cards. I like to have them do that. Jack likes to choose for them.
And there's a very specific reason why I think that we do that. We've discussed this before too, because I think that one thing about the different kinds of readings that we do is that with Gabby's reading, she's very much allowing a person to come to them and almost like you are going into you know, it's almost like you're going into a restaurant to have to see it and to experience it and to have an experience. What I'm doing is I'm giving them a product and telling them they have, I'm giving them a word and something to go with the action. Because what I ultimately do, and you know, is I also want to then draw them into taking on that card for themselves as a mantle, as a title for themselves, and then turning it into the artwork that that I create, where they are part of the deck and we can make new cards, which I'll get into more later on if we can touch on that, of what Jack of the Magic Arts does as well, because that is something that is a whole process of putting people into the deck literally and putting them into caricatures and into cartoons and making them into their deck and feeling connected to it more so. But I think Gab's done shuffling.
Yes, I have completed my shuffling.
Okay, Jack, I would like to cut the deck.
I have cut the deck.
Okay.
Great. Now, Jack, I would like for you to cut the deck again with a smaller number of cards on the top than you did the last time.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to give you 5 cards to pull. You can do a reading on
just
5
off the
cards,
top?
Can't you? No, I'm gonna give you the numbers.
Okay.
And I want you to do a reading for Dr. John.
All right.
Is that okay?
Yeah, it sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it would be interesting tonight. Okay. So, is the newly recut deck in front of you?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. I would like for you to pull out the following cards. Number 1.
Okay.
Number 2.
Okay.
Number 4. Number 17 and number 31. Are we counting? Gabby, is he counting correctly?
Yes.
So that's my reading for tonight.
Okay.
All right.
Now, with a 5-card spread, what you can do is you can make a what's called a Celtic cross.
Correct.
Which looks very much like a cross. And each of the positions of the Celtic cross are your cardinal points and then your center. Now there is a very specific way that generally the Celtic cross is read and across.
Number 17 is the center.
Yes, number 17 is your center.
17 is the center.
Yes.
Typically, a Celtic cross actually has 6 cards in it. There's a card that crosses the very first position,
which was your jumper.
Oh God! All right, fine.
Okay.
A jumper tarot card. There are many readers that, as you're shuffling the deck, if one card jumps out, sort of falls away from the rest of the main deck of cards, then it's important and it has something really important to say.
Then
to you.
Then you use that, please.
Yes.
I'm very picky and choosy about whether or not I include jumpers in my. It depends on how I'm feeling in the moment.
If you need
well,
a
that's
six
just
a,
me personally. Jack is doing the reading. He is the reader right now. So, and he really loves jumpers.
Oh, they're my favorite.
Yeah.
They remind me of me.
Jack Rabbit jumpers.
Just jumping out of the deck, just wanting to go,
okay.
No, I'm important.
That's good.
All right. So what we're going to go ahead and do is we'll start in that center. What we got is the Knight of Bows. Now, this deck particularly that we're using is called the Wildwood deck. This was a gift that was given to us by a wonderful couple. There's a whole thing about getting a gift of cards as opposed to getting your own. You can buy your own cards, absolutely, but there's something very special about the energy of a deck of cards that is gifted to you. And when we went out to California, there was a very sweet couple that we're friends with out there, and they were sweet enough to get me this gift for my birthday specifically. So I really wanted to use this one because it uses a lot of Native American imagery, which I know that's something that's connected to you, John, as well as takes the traditional symbols and then puts them into animal as well as a lot of very Celtic
druidic
kind of things as well, which is absolutely fantastic. And one of the things about it is there's a big theme about events that are going on in this deck. There's a lot of pictures, and I'll let people know again, in case they're at ceremonies and things like that. I'll let you know again, this is called the Wildwood Tarot. It also quite literally was the closest deck to me, so it was ready to be used for tonight. So so we start in the middle with the Nine of Bows.
I'm sorry?
Sorry, go ahead.
John?
No, I'm here. I'm just waiting.
Okay.
Oh, sorry.
So we start in the middle with the Knight of Bows. The Knight of Bows would be correlated to the Rider-Waite, is the Knight of Wands. The Wands are about passion, about your creative passions, things that you're designing, things that you love, things you want to put out into the world. And so the Knight of Bows, and in this particular card, it's the Fox, is at your core. Your number 17, your core card would be your Fox personality. That's a strong spirit to who you are, and the connection I'm making for this particular reading here is to see that Fox part of yourself, that sly and ready, able to go in and create, especially for your creative endeavors, go in and make them happen and find ways to do so, whatever way you can to go in and create that. Now, the four cardinal directions that are around the Fox, I want to go ahead and read just slightly different than your typical way, because with the Wildwood, one thing it talked about was actually it talks strongly about what's called the Wheel of the Year. And the Wheel of the Year is all of the Celtic holidays, Imbolc, Ostara, et cetera, and places those and uses the time of year to also connect to the different winds. So your north wind is your air element, your east wind, south wind, et cetera, and each one of those also changes you. So what four directions are pushing around you and how you interact with those winds. So at the top on your north wind, you have the Ten of Stones, and it's represented by what it calls home. The Ten of Stones in this image, or the Ten of Pentacles, because stones in this and are pentacles, is all about what you. So what is your most elevated thing? What is most important to you is home. Is your north? Is your always your northward direction? You are always looking for what is considered to be home, and how home and making that home and creating it and creating that security, creating that gain. And the beautiful thing about the Ten of Stones, particularly the Ten of Pentacles, is it's not just your home for yourself, it's home for others. In the traditional Ten of Pentacles card, it shows a lot of people gathering together. You have a whole family coming together and friends all gathering in one home. And so the way you put on your conventions, you do creating those things, your northern direction.
No, sir. So maybe we're all gathering in Camden.
That sounds good. That's home. That's home for me now. You know, that's a big deal. So you are definitely the person who is your northernmost point, your upward direction, the thing that is always your divine direction, I like to call it, is your your north.
Yeah, and I can share with you that I have a manuscript for a book called Golf in the Holy Land, and it takes place in Canada.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And it's something that I wrote about 9 years ago, and a number of people know about it. And Camden has always been north for me, so I don't live in Morgan, North Carolina anymore. So I'm moving toward Camden, and that is north for me.
Well, I think Camden, honestly, we're creating, it feels like that Camden's becoming a home for a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. I mean, now it is the home of your of the Camden Comic Con. It's the home of the of all these new festivals, these new things, and it's going to be the home of those things. So I definitely see this being something really connected to you, is that creating that home for people and for events and for everything else. So it's great. I want to share with someone.
I'm sorry,
great.
I had to interject. But yeah, it was kind of important. Good reading so far. Please. All right, I'm going to be like Donald Trump. Continue.
All right. So now your counter to that is, so that's your divine direction. What is always following you is your south wind. The south wind is the wind that pushes you from your sails. This is the thing that you create that that ends up pushing you toward that goal. And the south wind is usually that is usually something also denoting with fire. We always, you know, it's so funny in so many cultural things and so many ideas. We always see up in heaven is all, you know, cloudy and all that, and down in hell is all fire, right? But that fire is actually a motivating factor as well. It's that creativity, it's that passion, it's those temptations, it's all those different things, those intense burning things that keep us going, those maybe quote unquote darker things, not necessarily evil, but those darker intentions are from our south wind. And so in the south wind, what we have is the ancestor number 5. And number 5 in the major arcana is what is called the Hierophant. Now, the Hierophant, or Hierophant, depending on how you pronounce it, is the person who is the, essentially, he's like the high priest. He is a person who is the, denotes what is right and wrong, figures out and places himself as sort of a way of a moral compass for, sort of a conscience, so to speak. And in the personal deck that I'm actually creating myself, I turn that into the conscience as opposed to the high priest or the Hierophant, because I feel like more than anything else, a conscience, a person who just sort of, you talk it over, you see the two sides of something and you really think it through, is what that is from there. So your motivating factor, and with this cards particularly, it's actually in a lot of these cards you have humans. And in other cards, you have animals, straight animals. But this is actually a human-animal hybrid. You have the head of an animal on top of the body of a human. It's this deer, and he is actually the card. He's the box. The cover on the box is this card, particularly the ancestor, because it's about finding a way to decide for yourself what is right and wrong, and having the opportunity to do so. Because you'll have somebody there balance, you'll have something there to balance that out. So for you, what pushes you is somebody giving you those opportunities, somebody offering you those things, somebody giving you those, opening those doors for you, finding those hierophants, finding those, you know, and these can be, religious leaders, political leaders, people in the community, your Chamber of Commerce would be your Hierophants who you have to deal with, all those different types of people who are in positions where they can open those doors and allow you the rightness, the opportunity, essentially as the fox, to sneak in and build your homes, you know, to get in there and create something for other people. So those, so your south wind, what influences you and pushes you is going to be your Hierophants. And that allows you to then also become that for people. That's something that you can do for others as well, because these cardinal directions are pieces that you want to interact with particularly.
Okay.
Sounds good so far? All right. So,
well, it seems very reasonable so far.
So on your east wind, let me think of where I'm at right now. Yeah, your east wind would be your passive wind. I'm looking at that correctly. No, I'm sorry. Your active.
I know you're
wind.
Looking at
the yeah, I'm looking upside down. Your active wind. I'm sorry. This is the direction in which you influence the what you put out outwardly. And actually, I keep seeing it backwards. I wonder. Do you do anything? I don't think you're left-handed, but you are more in the creative anyways, the creative side of your mind. So when you're doing these endeavors and all that, is there anything that you sort of use your, you know, I feel like you use your creative side more as your active side, as opposed to your right brain. You're a right brain thinker when you're doing this kind of work, as opposed to your left brain, you're doing it analytically. I mean, it's very thought out, but it's more about the doing it creatively than analytically. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, there's always a fight with me between mm-hmm. creative and analytical. And when you talk about left and right,
mm-hmm.
when I used to play golf all the time, and, you know, I want to get back to playing golf again, I used to carry my bag on my left shoulder because it would make my left side stronger. That's what Ben Hogan, Sam Snead, and those guys did. You got to make your left side stronger if you are a right-handed guy. And so and if you look at me straight on, you'll find my left shoulder is higher than my right shoulder.
I see.
Succeeded.
Yeah, I'm just – sorry, go ahead. Continue.
No, that was it. I just succeeded.
All right, well then, that makes sense. Okay, because I'm seeing that either side of this can really be an something you can take actively and also passively. So what I'll go ahead and do is I'll just go ahead and start on the right-hand side, which would be your typical active side. Think of that like – the hand you pick up a sword with, what most people do, you know, the hand you pick up, you actively affect the universe with. And so on your right-hand side, we have the seven of vessels, or this will be our cups. So this is your emotions. And in this, it talks about mourning as the idea behind the card. The seven of cups, particularly in the tarot, is about the idea of having many, many choices, sometimes even almost too many choices, and looking at those and trying to find what emotionally you attach to. And so in the card, this usually is this person looking up at like seven different cups, I'm sorry, with a castle in one and a serpent in another and a tree in another and all these different symbols and trying to make a choice and decide what the best choice is. But having almost too many options and not knowing the direction they want to go. In these cards, it's beautiful. At the base of the tree is a skull with seven different sized bowls sitting on the ground. And there's nothing else except for that, just the tree, the skull, and these bowls. And there's some rocks around the base of the tree as well. And what I think it's showing is that the vessel of the mind of your mind and what you using your mind is so important to you, and how you utilize your mind and how you think is so important to you. And I think what you have discovered is that you, by taking the option of just knowing how to do anything and everything and having a lot of different options available in your mind, because the skull particularly is more important as a vessel than any other vessel, because there are seven vessels there, but the brain itself, the skull itself, is a vessel as well. We are vessels. We are vessels for what we do and everything. So I feel like in this reading and how I'm seeing this connected with you is very much the idea of, as far as active, which also is a passive thing, because taking in knowledge is a very passive thing as well, but it's very, you decide to do that very actively. You will learn anything and everything, and you will not only learn it, you will master it. You'll get whatever certification that says that you are officially it, and you know it, and you can do it, and everything else. I mean, you know, that's I don't need to be a psychic to know that that's something about you. You know, you're Dr. Stamey. So that's direct connection to the vessel of the mind being so important to you as your active way and passive way. And I think that's why I was getting a little of reading on both of them. It could be one or the other. So on the other side, what we have is we have a major arcana card, another major arcana card. So we have what's really neat about this is you have a court card in the center. That's you. You're a knight. And then you have on all four cardinals, you have two major cards and two minor cards, which is a very balanced person. And considering, you know, that you have already gone through your life and up to the point you are at and have a stable, you're more of a stable person, having two majors and two minors actually makes a lot of sense for you as well. You'll see a lot of times if you pull for like kids who haven't even started figuring out themselves yet or teenagers and everything, they'll have their cards will be all over the place. I found that at, as you sort of balance, you get to yourself, you get into that, you know, the 30 plus age, you have your cards actually become more balanced. And something I've seen consistently over and over and over again, it's kind of amazing. Those of you who end up doing readings eventually, take a note of those kind of things. It's a beautiful thing to see that when you start noticing a pattern in the cards that play out, things like that of how many majors are popping up, how many minors are popping up for people, what kind of people get majors or minors, what kind of people get what kind of cards, you know, what kind of people are court cards, what kind of people are major arcana cards. It's a fascinating thing you'll start discovering. It'll help you with your readings a lot. So what we're looking at here on the west wind is the moon. And specifically it says the moon on the water, and it's this beautiful image of a river or lake cascading out toward the edge of the card. And then in the distance is a silhouette of a bull on a hill with birds, looks like ingrets, flying above under a giant full moon there. And now the moon specifically in the tarot is all about self-reflection and about quiet contemplation. And it's all that understanding and having that deeper, almost the... where the sun is all the physical world and everything, the moon is all about the metaphysical, the dreams, the, you know, all of the, yeah, imagination and creativity is a great way of putting it, the imagination, all of that. So while you do balance out all of that knowledge on one side, what you also hold on to is scary cast, paranormal, ethereal things, mystery, mysticism, all that kind of stuff. And that is such an important part of who you are. And so that draws into you, and that west wind, which is usually your very passive one, and this obviously is, but you also, even here, it's also an active thing you go for. It is something you actively go and pursue, is that west wind. And that is, that's, I really like this. I like this spread. I'll go ahead and pull that card that I had grabbed earlier that had jumped out of the deck, because I think this is such a great way, because as I was talking before, the compass is such an important part of the metaphor for the wheel of, I pulled instead of a Celtic cross that typically would be done in that way. The metaphor that I used for you was a compass instead, not a cross, but a compass, a directional way of you changing your life. And what jumped out of the deck, honest to goodness, is the Ace of Arrows, which this would be the Ace. The Ace cards are always the thing that were each of the objects being handed to the person. So it's the initial concept of that thing, of that philosophy. So in this sense, it's the actions you take. And there were no swords that were drawn. These actions and words were not drawn at all. Your actions were not drawn, because what jumped out of the deck was the Ace of Actions, that at any moment you can send this arrow to any direction you want to. You can spin it to go whichever way you want to, and you will take whichever direction you need to move the winds in order to take your action. That you're not going to have it focus one way or the other. You're not the kind of person, you will focus on whatever needs to be focused on and go in all four cardinal directions in order to move forward. You'll find a way and you'll spin that compass. And so we essentially, quite literally, created a compass here on this pool in a very literal and physical way. And what I love about these cards is that each of them has a little snippet of words on it. And for the Ace of Arrows, it says it's the breath of life. And so when you do this, it's the idea that each breath, I think that you are, that this pool, more than anything else, is an incarnate of what South Carolina's wonderful catchphrases, which is Dum Spiro Spero. It's my favorite Latin phrase. I had no idea. It's always been my favorite Latin phrase. And what it means is, as I breathe, I hope. You will see this on all the little bumper stickers all over the place and everything. It's as I breathe, I hope. And so I think you really capture that with the actions you take, is that with every breath you hope, and you go and you take that hope, and you find a way to spread it and to push it out into the world. Do I still have you there, John?
Absolutely, you do. And I was actually like kind of thinking about what you were saying, and it's really neat. Kind of mirrors a lot of the things that I think about. So thank you very much for the reading. It was really wonderful.
What I'd like to do is, if you'd like, I can take a picture of this for your viewers to see, and if you want to put it on the website,
absolutely.
Just so they can see
a picture
Fred.
Of it. And they can feed into my psyche, and that's fine. it's a good thing. So anyway, that was my first question. Now I have a very loaded second question. Are you ready?
Okay. All right.
One of my dear friends is Dr. Jean-Louis Lassay. His daughter is Sarah Lassay. She wrote the book Psychic Junkie. It's about people that spend hundreds or thousands of dollars every month talking to psychics and tarot readers to help them predict her future.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am very fortunate that I did two talks at the Ryan Institute of Parapsychology about the Psychic Junkie, and I had Sarah Lassay on the phone with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you do as a reader is wonderful, and it is absolutely, it's incredible. But what about people that abuse the use of tarot readers and fortune tellers? It costs some money. They do it online. They do it on the phone. Talk to me about that.
Thank you for bringing this up, actually, because I think it's important that I did it, but I went and had a bad experience myself with a tarot reader, and they wanted to charge me $2,500 for a crystal, and I did not want to pay that because I told them that I knew that, and they kept trying to convince me that they were a psychic. And I said, I know you're a psychic. That's why I called you. I know what you're capable of and everything else. That's not what I'm asking you. I'm asking you for to talk to me and to tell me how I can do it. It's almost like a just teach me how to fish. You know, I came to her yelling basically, hey, give me the tools. Give me the words. Give me the ability because I also am capable. I'm coming to you as a more experienced psychic is what you're claiming to be. Show me how to fix this thing that I want very specifically and to get the answer that I'm looking for. And she refused. And unless I paid $2,500 for a crystal. Now, I do believe in the power of healing crystals. I believe in the power of certain objects and ceremony and ritual working. I even believe in if you have enough people all willing for the same thing or praying for the same thing, that can affect things. But the problem with tarot readers giving for huge amounts of money to do readings is that what ends up happening is a lot of these tarot readers are responsible to a divine power, a very powerful, very strong power that's giving them their ability. And if that is the case, that powerful deity or that creature or that demon even needs their power, needs them to keep collecting from people and to rip that energy out of people in order to stay in business, in order to continue to be powerful. A really powerful energy or God doesn't need people to worship them, you know? But the weaker ones
exactly.
do. Is that you know, you get what I'm saying? You know, so you have these weak spirits, these weak power. You have these weak creatures, entities, whatever you want to call them, energies in people, or even manifested in themselves. How they have created them. I like to call them tulpas, which means that they have essentially created a dark side of themselves and then it manifests into its own creature. And that thing needs to keep being fed. And so when you use that energy to then feed off of people, that is a dangerous thing. And what I will mention right now is that one thing that I do very specifically, and it's written in ink that cannot be erased, is on every convention and every single thing I do, I will never charge for a tarot reading. We do not charge for tarot readings. We offer people,
correct.
I offer people artwork that is based on the tarot reading if they want that. And that I will charge for, and that's basically just because artwork is a physical object that I can hand you, and you can do that, and it's very inexpensive, and you can have artwork with you in the card, just like you would pay for a commission of piece of art.
And it's cost of materials.
Yeah, it's cost of materials. That's pretty much it, and the few minutes I spent drawing it up or whatever
time.
So that, but as far as the tarot reading itself, the tarot reading, I'm not having to pay anybody the energy or the money of any other deity more powerful than me that's controlling me for what I'm doing. So if anybody asks for exorbitant amounts of money to do the tarot readings, that is a danger. Now, what I will say is there are some wonderful sites, though, because I'm not going to completely just say the whole thing's bunk and anybody who charges is bad. That is not that I'm not going to go to that extreme either. Because what I will, me personally, how I feel about it, is there are great communities that offer a community space of people coming together and will charge you for the community space. We'll charge you for being on the website. Personally, I like Biddy Tarot. It's a very, very popular one. It's a famous one. I like them. I think that what they offer is very good, and they have some good psychics on there who do charge, but they are charging and they're being paid through the being on the site, not through you personally going and you know, and you can tip them and do all that kind of stuff and offer them what you want to offer them and give them that, which it is a service. So, you know, tipping is absolutely fine. You know, we put our tip jar out as well. It is like being a waiter or anything else. So, so there's that. But yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up because I really do feel strongly that a lot of people get gypped and bamboozled and they get hurt because they are looking for advice, they're looking for help. And the sad thing is it doesn't just hurt that individual person. It hurts the whole community that is trying to legitimize themselves as people who can help you with your problems. You know, it hurts everybody when we have those people messing it up for everybody. And it just adds one more thing on top of it of, see, these people are just out to steal your money. You know?
Exactly. And that's the one thing that we want to promote, is that you got to be careful who you get a reading from. You got to believe in them, and they don't need to be asking for inordinate amounts of money, because if they are, that's all they're about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And so anyway, look, it has been a pleasure having the two of you on here. We've had a wonderful time talking about tarot readings. You've done one for me. It was quite revolutionary. And can I have the two of you back on here soon?
Absolutely.
We'd love that.
Well, wonderful. Well, thank you. And you can catch Jack and Gabby, the Lizard Man Festival in Bishopville, South Carolina. That will be June the 9th on Saturday at the Cotton Museum, South Carolina Cotton Museum. Do not miss it. It'll be a lot of fun. So I want to say thank you to the two of you, and we'll see you next time, and we'll see you next time on ScaryCast. Rock and roll.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.